Welcome. I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Call's Media Roundtable. Later in the show, we're going to unpack the Genius Act, a sweeping federal cryptocurrency bill that, according to The Lever, could spread fraud-ridden, destabilizing digital currencies across the banking system. And on Tuesday, the Senate passed the bill 68-30. Notably, Donald Trump and his family are set to profit potentially handsomely from this law. But first, we're going to discuss the devastating impacts of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB, funding cuts. Just yesterday, the Senate and then later the House delivered a major blow to public media and the millions who rely on it by voting to defund NPR and PBS, effectively ending nearly 60 years of federal support for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Senate vote in particular was largely along party lines, with Democrats all voting against the bill and all but two Republicans voting for it. The GOP exceptions were Maine's Susan Collins and Alaska's Lisa Murkowski. Kentucky Republican Senator Mitch McConnell voted not to advance debate on the bill, which prompted Vice President J.D. Vance to cast a tie-breaking vote to approve the final measure. As I mentioned, the House has approved it, so Trump is expected to sign it potentially by tomorrow. The CPB now stands to lose $1.1 billion meant to fund it through the next 2 years. Now, it's hard to predict what's going to happen to public radio stations across the country, but public media executives say that some smaller broadcasters will be forced off the air in the months and years to come, leaving potentially millions of people without vital sources of news and information. And according to NPR CEO Catherine Marr, nearly 3 in 4 Americans say they rely on their public radio stations for alerts and news for their public safety. So to get the details and what this means for KALW Public Media, right here where we broadcast from, we're very pleased to be joined by James Cass, our executive director for KALW Public Media. Good to have you back with us, James.
Thanks, Ethan. How are you?
I'm good, as good as good can be, given the news here. I also just want to let listeners know we're guessing that many of you are going to have questions about what this might mean for KALW or whatever station you're listening to our program today. So the phone lines to call to ask any questions or share any comments or concerns you have, the number is 866-798-8255 or 866-798-TALK. You can also email with any questions or thoughts to yourcall@kalw.org. Well, James, you asked me how I'm doing. How are you doing given what's happened? This is something we all feared might come, and now it's happened. So how are you managing this?
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine personally. And, you know, KLW is resilient and is full of people like you and Rose, who has been at it for years, and we're not going to give up the fight to make sure that we're here for our listeners and for the people of the Bay Area. I want to clarify something, though, because it's not really a defunding of NPR and PBS per se. I don't know the finances of PBS as much, but CPB only provides 1% of NPR's direct budget. It's around 7 or 8% when you include the indirect fees that they get from stations like KLW, because we do pay NPR every year to be able to broadcast the programs like Morning Edition and All Things Considered and programs like that. It's really a defunding of the stations across the country. You know, 1,000 or so, at least in the radio field, 1,000 or so public radio stations that serve communities that are created by people from the community and that are developed for people of that community. So it's a defunding of a viable network of independent journalists and of public radio media music stations. The institution in Washington, D.C., NPR, which was mostly under attack, much more than the independent stations were, they're going to be fine. It's 1% of their budget. It really is the network that they helped to facilitate, you know, all credit to them. But it's really the independent stations like KLW. And as you mentioned, you know, CPB gives us about $400,000 a year. It's about 6 or 7% of our budget. But for some of these organizations, it's 50 to 60% of their budget. You know, we had Loris Taylor on yesterday from the Native Media Network. And, you know, a lot of these tribal communities will lose their stations. A lot of rural communities will lose their stations in largely Republican areas. So it's, you know, it's a really sort of almost confounding thing that the Congress has done and the way that they've acquiesced to the president.
Well, I appreciate that clarification. It sounds like so much collateral damage then that there's this political target on national public radio, NPR based in D.C., but it's these rural stations. And if that's the case, and especially given that Republicans, and this was a party line vote, that Republicans passed this and they largely represent these rural areas, why didn't those politics factor in? Why did they go along with it in your view?
I mean, look, it seems like it's a lot like everything else is happening nowadays. It actually seemed as though it was not going to pass the Senate until last week. The president posted on Truth Social that any Republican who did not back the rescission would lose his support and he would find somebody to primary against him. So I think it was the regular fear-based Congress we have right now and, you know, a relatively feckless Democratic opposition. So I just think it's, you know, I think it's as much as anything, it's about obviously the fear of independent journalism. I think it's the desire, like everything else, to privatize the media, to further privatize the media. The fear is, you know, if the funding is restored in, say, 2 years, depending on what happens in the midterms, we're going to have a totally different landscape. You know, commercial stations could come in and buy the licenses of some of these non-commercial broadcasters across the country. You know, stations will collapse and things will become further and further consolidated. And, you know, we see what just happened with Disney and ABC and Paramount and CBS and their, you know, inability to stand up against, you know, horrible lawsuits that made no sense. Like, we don't want to be, I think the power of independent media, the power of public media is that we're not beholden to corporate interests. And corporations are going to look to further privatize media because they will fill gaps now that these gaps will exist.
Well, as you mentioned, maybe there's a chance that this funding could be restored perhaps in 2 years, but you know, those risks seems to me, it could also mean that once you lose the people involved, I mean, we've seen this with the federal agencies and the layoffs, it's unlikely they're necessarily going to be able to come back, right? I mean, these are potentially generationally impacting cuts for some of these smaller stations, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it will be a different landscape, if at all. There are going to be some attempts by CPB and NPR and PBS and others to do something in the coming appropriation bills. But certainly the two-year fee funding that it was developed by Congress to keep it away from politics, that's done. And I don't know if that will ever be repaired. And even if it is, we're going to have a very different media landscape. It will impact KLW. I don't want to pretend it won't. It's going to impact a lot of these rural stations in much more devastating ways where they will close down.
I wanted to follow up with you on that. You mentioned KLW now stands to lose $400,000. Can you talk about what those cuts will mean for this station and any other impacts you might anticipate or that listeners should anticipate?
Yeah, I mean, well, we get $400,000 from CPB. The truth is we pay almost $400,000 in fees to NPR. So depending on what NPR decides to do and whether or not NPR is going to cut some of their fees this year, which is on the table, we'll sort of see what it means for us financially. There's another cost, though, that's associated with, you know, our relationship with NPR and with CBB, and that includes music licensing. So not only is it the 44 hours of locally produced music programming that we do, but it's also all the music you hear underneath the shows, whether they're national shows or local shows. That stuff is all in danger of going away too, because that's stuff that every station across the country relies on sort of parent groups to take care of. If each station has to navigate and negotiate music rights, none of us are going to be able to afford it, and it's going to take up a ton of time. So we actually don't know what it's going to mean for the landscape. For KLW, look, I mean, we've been trying as best as we can to invest in a new generation of public media voices, whether it's through our Uncuffed programming, working with incarcerated and formerly incarcerated individuals, whether it's through our Audio Academy that brings new voices into the public media landscape, representing new communities, new issues that we don't necessarily hear in the media, whether it's working with teenagers. You know, we're not going to be able to invest in those programs nearly the way we had hoped to. So it's going to slow the opportunity for us to best represent the Bay Area. Don't know what's going to happen with some of these shows that are created by other stations that we stream. So we'll see what happens there. We're going to remain. The real answer, Ethan, is it's up to the people of the Bay Area. If the people of the Bay Area are willing to step up and stand with KLW, then we will be able to continue doing the work at the quality we do and sort of that with the representation that we strive for. If we don't get that kind of financial support from our listeners, we're going to be in trouble, and we're going to have to have some really tough decisions, and we're going to have to see what it means. I honestly think it's, nobody really knows what it's going to mean, but we all know that we're now entering into a completely different economic landscape than we were in just yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it's going to impact every single station across the board. KQED, our friends down the street, just laid off 45 people the other day. Mm-hmm. That wasn't necessarily tied to the CPB cuts, but I know that went into the formulation. So yes, we're going to try our best to not do that. But yeah, again, it's really up to the people of the Bay Area.
Well, the stakes are really high, and I think you've laid them out really well for listeners. And I should let listeners know, if you do want to step up to support, this is not a fundraising show, but James did really emphasize here how we are listener supported. You can always give at kalw.org. And if you want to call to make a donation, it is the number is 1-800-525-9917. If you're just joining us, I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. And we're speaking with James Cass, Executive Director of KALW Public Media, to talk about the impacts of the rollback of federal funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The number to call if you have questions, concerns, if you want to know what's going to happen to your favorite shows, maybe it's your call, maybe it's another program, or thoughts about what NPR stations and NPR affiliates like KALW should be doing in response, the number to call to join the conversation, 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email any questions or comments you have to yourcall@kalw.org. And James, you've talked a bit here about the relationship, or about the role of NPR national based in DC versus these local stations. Can you talk a bit more about that relationship? NPR does rely on some of these stations for its reporting. And you talked about the licensing fee that stations like KLW is paying into NPR. Can you just kind of describe the landscape for people who are unfamiliar with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's really important to distinguish, because, you know, a lot of people, to no fault of their own, don't, you know, you think you're listening to NPR, but nobody's really listening to NPR. You're typically listening to NPR programming in your local stations. There's something like 43 million people a day listen to public radio, and they listen to their local station. Some of that programming comes via NPR. Some of our best known programs, like Morning Edition, like All Things Considered, et cetera, et cetera, those are produced in NPR, you know, Tiny Desk, those kinds of things. Those are produced in Washington, D.C. and distributed out. But a lot of other shows are distributed in other stations, like Terry Gross. You know, Fresh Air is created in Philadelphia, for instance. Shows are created, I mean, you know, Your Call is syndicated in a number of other stations. A lot of stations create their own programming, and then that's picked up. And so we are a viable network, and NPR has facilitated that network. And I do think that part of this attack by, you know, frankly, the Republicans in Congress for years now, and now the Heritage Foundation, et cetera, I think it's about disrupting that network. I think that one of the real losses and one of the real challenges, I think, is, you know, beyond the financial piece, is the continuing and growing distrust of media. NPR local stations or NPR affiliates are some of the most trusted media sources in the country. So when you destabilize that more and more, you continue to, frankly, invest in distrust of media. All the horrible things that were said in the Senate and the House over the last 2 weeks about NPR and about public media in general, that just continues to push this distrust in media, this sort of alternative facts reality, this one narrative that is the most important narrative, and there's no room for any other stories that don't fit that dominant storytelling. That, to me, is one of the greatest challenges, and is going to be one of the things that we need to fight the most, is to make sure that we're continuing to invest in trust, people trusting their local resources, people trusting their independent journalists, and people trusting their local station, because we can't rely on these large corporate, you know, media news sources for trust. We know that that's what's pushed some of the distrust. I think NPR has done a fantastic job of helping to facilitate and bring together this network of stations, large and small, from rural, suburban, and urban areas all across the country, and done a great job in supporting us and providing us multiple different resources, and frankly, giving us an opportunity to know each other. Mm-hmm. That now has been torn apart. And I think that's going to be one of the things that's going to be the hardest to rebuild. It's hard to rebuild a national network that spent 60 years being built when you rip it apart overnight.
Well, and it's not a secret, you know, to your point about trust, that the GOP and Trump supporters have been, you know, obviously hammering at the media and specifically wanting to get rid of public radio and PBS altogether, especially since the election. Trump and many GOP lawmakers have really stepped up their attacks. Beyond rolling back this funding, what else do you think this administration might be able to do going forward now to harm public media even more?
Well, I think, I mean, you know, that's a good question. They also pulled back a bunch of educational funding. So a lot of educational funding that was taking place, particularly in the documentary side and the video side and the television side of public media. There are a number of public media service organizations. I think of an organization like ITVS, based right here in San Francisco, which gets a large part of its budget every year from CPB. There are organizations like American Documentary, which does the POV series. They get a lot of large amount of their money from CPB. I mean, again, Ethan, it's to me, and you guys talk about this every week, we have a continuing growing distrust in media. We have a continuing lack of access to local media, to local storytelling. We've seen local newspapers decimated. We've seen local journalism falling apart. We've seen a rise in media deserts. I think that this will accelerate that, because in many communities, obviously not the Bay Area, but in many communities, public radio is the only source for local news, and it's free and it's accessible by everybody. There's no paywalls. You don't need a cable subscription. You just can turn on your radio and there's your public radio station. That's a huge loss. And we will recover. The sector will persevere, but it's going to be a very different sector in 2 years.
Yeah, especially as you noted earlier, for rural communities where there isn't a lot of other options to get news and public safety alerts. If you're just joining us, this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Ethan Elkind. We're speaking with James Cass, Executive Director of KALW Public Media, to talk about the impact of federal cuts to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The phone lines are open. The number is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or email any questions or comments to yourcall@kalw.org. We did have an off-air caller, a longtime listener, supporter, fan, who writes that he has given every month, but it's about time San Francisco's billionaires step up and support us in public radio, TV, and media. Well, if any billionaires are listening, we definitely would greatly appreciate the support. KALW.org is the way to support stations KLW radio station, but other stations as well will need support going forward. We also have an email in from Robert in San Francisco, who emails to ask, what are you hearing from other NPR stations? Is there a way they can join together to fight this? So James, you mentioned there is this sort of network that was created through NPR of these stations. What are you hearing from them? And yeah, what are the plans here at this point?
Yeah, that's actually a fantastic question, because I think there are many of us, certainly us here at KLW, who are frankly wanting to rethink public media anyway. We've been thinking about it for a long time. And I think the optimist in me says this is going to force everybody's hand to really rethink what public media is and how this network works together. Now, that's not going to help the fact that a lot of stations are going to shut down, particularly in rural areas, particularly in tribal communities. But I'm going to tell a story. Like, when I've been here now for just about 2 years, the very first, we meet all the NPR stations with NPR leadership, meet once a month via Zoom. The very first meeting I was in under prior NPR leadership, it was a meeting about network collaboration. The only people who spoke were people from NPR, the organization in Washington, D.C. So, you know, in a meeting about collaboration, they're the only ones talking. So there was always a very interesting dynamic. I think there's been a push in the last little while, and I think Catherine Maurer supports this, that we have to rethink the network as a whole, that the power of the network is the network itself. The power is not in Washington, D.C. In fact, many of us think that the D.C. and New York-based media has been part of the distrust problem, that we actually need alternative visions for what public media can be. Again, free, independent, accessible. That's what independent and nonprofit public media is. But we should rethink where those stories come from. There's this whole argument around there's not enough, you know, the NPR is too liberal. The voices of public media are too liberal. There's not enough voices from the right. I actually think the challenge is that there's not enough geographic diversity. I think if you want to get people from Kentucky listening more to their public media, we need journalists from Kentucky. We need journalists from all across the country and having those voices dominate the narrative and the airways more than just these Washington, D.C. and New York City-based media voices. So I think there is a push for stations to think, how do we really lean into the power that the network has? The 43 million plus listeners who are listening every week are not, again, are not listening to quote unquote NPR. They're listening to their local station that reflects the community from which they are, that has the accents of the people who live there, knows the issues of the people who live there. Mm-hmm. And people know the corners, the street and hinge, because they're from that community. I think that's a really critical part of it. We've mm-hmm. actually gotten a couple of emails in the last couple of days, Ethan, asking if KLW can adopt the rural stations. I wish we could. I wish we were in that kind of financial position. But that idea of how do we each support each other better into the future is certainly something that we have to look at now.
Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of emails have come in, an off-air caller. Eileen from Mountain View says, I do remember a time when radio and TV went off at night. Would that happen again? She says she still remembers the TV sign-off music. James, I'm assuming that's not the case for KLW, but I mean, could we be hearing essentially the sign-off in many stations around the country?
You know, it's so funny. That's for those of you who know, who were up late, we stream BBC overnight. And there's actually a fair amount of listeners, people who work late shifts, who listen to the BBC from at 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning. So again, each station is always thinking very carefully about who their listeners are and what their listeners are doing and when they're needed and what they're looking for. That may be an option. I think there may be, I don't know if it will be dead space so much, but it might just be more, we're just going to stream pre-programmed music. We're going to move away from local DJs. We're going to move away from local journalism. We're just going to have NPR streaming 24 hours a day, or we're going to have BBC streaming 24 hours a day. I think there's a real danger that the local is what's going to disappear.
Mm-hmm. And we also have a off-air question, which is there another way public broadcasters can spread out their message to listeners, internet, shortwave, radio, are there alternatives here that might be lower cost that might help make up for this loss of funding?
Yeah.
My editorial in the question. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I think many of us are trying and thinking through that and have for years, you know, we now have many people who listen to us via streaming as we do listen to us via live radio. I think there's been that push for years. The cost isn't so much in the distribution. The cost is in the investing in the journalists, the investing in the editors, the investing in the producers. Like, that's the cost. It's people. It's the hours that it takes to do the investigative journalism. It's the hours it takes to do the interviews. It's the hours it takes to edit down a piece to make sure it fits in the radio time slot. Like, that's the cost. Not to mention, of course, all the back end. You know, you know, one of the great things that KLW is working on now is we're working on this Warfield building downtown to turn it into a hub of independent media, arts, and culture. And that takes time and money as well, too. You know, so it's the back-end infrastructure that supports the work that listeners hear. That's the cost. It's not mm-hmm. so much how do you hear it, because it's really, we have to invest to make great programming. Mm-hmm.
So we have another email question or comment from Susie, who writes that we should be meeting immediately with the millionaires and billionaires of the region to help combat these losses of funding. Yeah, so that was my question for you, James. What is the fundraising plan here?
Yeah, we're working on it. And again, we've been working on it for a while. And we have gotten some new funders who have come in of late. And a lot of people have just been stepping up in the last couple of days. You know, I think as much as anything, it's on KLW to prove its value. To show that we're part of the really critical civic infrastructure of the San Francisco Bay Area, that we want to be part of the revitalization of the city. And that's why we're investing in that building downtown, but that we also want to be a part of the sort of future narrative creation and the future civic infrastructure of the San Francisco Bay Area and allow the Bay Area to tell its own story. And so it's on us to make sure that that work is visible, to make sure that the millionaires and the billionaires know that we exist, that we're not tucked away in a quiet part of the city and folks don't know who we are. So we have a lot of work to do, but I do think, you know, anybody who's interested in the health and the future of the Bay Area should invest in public media. It's a core part of who we are.
Absolutely. Well, we just appreciate you coming on the station here and explaining the impacts and the potential response from these federal rollbacks for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and how it affects us here at KALW Public Media. James Cass, Executive Director, thanks so much for joining us today and explaining this to the listeners.
Thank you, Ethan, and thank you to everybody who listens to KLW. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And KLW, navigating these federal funding cutbacks, always appreciates monthly donations. It helps us to survive. As we just discussed, it will protect and empower this really essential source of fact-based information. So you can always give at klw.org or call us at 1-800-525-9917 if you want to support the station and the work that we do here, especially with these cutbacks. Next up, we're going to talk about the House-approved Genius Bill. And the Senate also, the U.S. Congress actually has now passed this Genius Bill, which is going to create a new federal framework for cryptocurrency. We'll talk about the implications after this short break.